Whenever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that the personal revolution is far more difficult than the first step.
This is the Quality News Network. Former top White House aide Louis Scooter Libby was convicted today for obstruction of justice, perjury, and lying to the FBI in connection with the scandal over the leak of a CIA agent's identity. President Bush has appointed former Senator Bob Dole and Health and Human Services Secretary Donna Shalala to lead the administration's investigations into problems at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. The substandard hospital conditions are suspected to pervade the entire system. Insurgents slaughtered Shiite pilgrims that were walking to the holy city of Karbala today with a series of suicide bombings and small arms fire that killed at least 115 and wounded close to 200. The attacks came a day after U.S. forces suffered their deadliest day in a month. 9 American soldiers were killed in explosions north of Baghdad. At a meeting in New York Tuesday, the United States demanded that North Korea come clean about its highly enriched uranium program. The archrivals held a second day of landmark talks at the Waldorf Astoria. Pyongyang has offered to scrap its nuclear program in exchange for food. Washington is pressuring China to pressure Iran to cooperate with the UN's nuclear watchdog agency. Yesterday, the UN agency met in Austria to talk about ways to convince Iran to abandon its uranium enrichment program. Operation Achilles' Heel, a very important mission focusing on southern Afghanistan today. 55,000 Afghani and coalition troops targeting militants and drug dealers. In the same region, the Taliban captured 3 reporters. War has broken out in Mogadishu, Somalia. A welcoming ceremony at the airport for Ugandan peacekeepers today was interrupted by mortar fire. Ethiopian security forces searching for 5 British embassy workers that were kidnapped in the remote Afar region said their captors had taken them across the border into Eritrea. The Senate voted today to allow 45,000 airport screeners the same rights as Border Patrol and Customs and Immigration agents, despite a veto threat from the White House. A U.S. Army medic who went AWOL, refusing a second tour in Iraq as a conscientious objector, has been convicted of desertion and sentenced to 8 months in jail. 2 strong earthquakes, a 6.1 and 6.6, struck Sumatra this morning. Reports are 82 people killed.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. CollaborativeDivorce.tv.
After 4 years of exploration, 2 cave discovery of the longest underwater cave system in the world. It stretches 95 miles under the Yucatan Peninsula. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan thinks there's a 1/3 probability the U.S. would see a recession this year. Greenspan's comments contradict those of the current Fed chief, Ben Bernanke, who quelled investors' panic last week by telling Congress the U.S. economy may strengthen this year. Ford is recalling about 155,000 SUVs and pickup trucks because of improperly working cruise control systems. Citigroup is buying Japanese brokerage firm Nikko Cordial for $10.7 billion. French Airbus workers are on strike. That following the aircraft manufacturer's announcement, it will eliminate 10,000 jobs in a cost-cutting effort. Florida's Seminole Indian Tribe has acquired the Hard Rock Cafes, hotels, and casinos in a $965 million deal. Light sweet crude is trading at $60.65 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold is at $646.20 an ounce. Stocks surged across the board today, and almost all 30 components of the Dow Jones Industrial Average ended in the black. The recovery even extended into the Asian markets. The Dow was up 157 points. NASDAQ up 44. S&P 500 up 21. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Welcome to a rather glorious little Tuesday late afternoon here in Central Time. Maybe it's a little earlier for you, but whatever time of day it is, this is Head On, and it's a happy little Head On edition. We got to see justice work today. I hope. The 12 members of the jury, tried and true, who sat through obfuscation, prevarication, mendacity of the Libby defense. I couldn't remember if he recalled whether he forgot. Right, doctor, expert? That's right, sir. Obviously, it's they saw through the BS and delivered four counts of guilty verdicts. Let's see. Guilty of perjury, guilty of lying to the FBI, and guilty of, and this is my favorite, obstruction of justice. Now, don't get too worked up, because it says it all. If you go over to our good friends at WD40.com, D-U-B-Y-A, the letter D, 40.com, WD40.com, you'll see screenshots there of what went up on Fox. And it's just charming. A banner that says, Scooter Libby found not guilty of lying to FBI investigators. And then over Britt Hume, you know, this dude used to have a career. This guy used to actually be a respected news anchor. But now he sits there and yammers away for a check from Rupert Murdoch, and he gets God knows how many millions of dollars a year for doing it. And they put fonts in front of him like, breaking news, Scooter Libby found not guilty of lying to FBI investigators. This is pitiful. This is just pathetic. The guy was convicted on 4 out of 5 counts against him. Obstruction of justice, lying to the FBI, and 2 counts of perjury. What does Fox put up? Why, Fox puts up, Scooter Libby found not guilty of lying to FBI investigators, the 1 count he was acquitted on. This is just astonishing. I mean, we make jokes about Fox. And, yeah, they're what they are. I mean, I guess they've got a right to be right-wing if they want to be. But somewhere along the way, if you're going to call yourself a news organization, you're going to have to actually say some truth. Stephen Colbert's truthiness is not sufficient in the journalism business. Cougar Louie found not guilty of lying to FBI investigators. You know, Britt Hume didn't write that font. He was on screen. I don't think. This was some low-level the font generator operator who's got marching orders from the managing editor to just sort of have an endless loop of, Home on the Range playing in the back of his head. And nothing is heard, never is heard, a discouraging word. And the White House is not cloudy all day. Oh, I sang, sorry. But no matter what Fox says, the fact remains that Scooter Libby got busted today. That's right, I, Scooter Libby. Sounds like a children's science fiction book, doesn't it? And yeah, while we're out there, and I suppose some of us in the liberal progressive realm of America are celebrating this in some way or another, and there is cause to celebrate. And some of us are wondering how he might be punished. And of course, our good friend Dookie over at WD40.com just used big red letters, guilty! And then wrote very quietly underneath the word guilty, enjoy the pound me in the federal prison. Me, you know, I don't know. You know what the first thing that came to my mind when it came to thinking about punishing iScooter? iRobot, iScooter. Back when Moses was doing his whole let my people go shtick, it finally got so bad that, you know, it turned out, Moses gave him the I'm rubber and you're glue, what bounces off me, it sticks to you treatment. And so, you know, the next curse that Pharaoh issued would be visited upon Pharaoh, and that was when the angel of death came over and killed every firstborn male child. You know, it's a typical Old Testament mean-ass God sort of behavior. And there's a sense of a yearning for justice, and that justice and the punishment should somehow fit the crime. You know, we take 17-year-old young men and just stick them in prison for the rest of their lives because they were caught with a pocket full of rock, and just give up on them and warehouse them for the rest of their days. iScooter will go to some club fed. And yeah, it's still a prison because the door's locked behind you and you can't leave. He faces up to 25 years. But do you remember the book that iScooter wrote? This is the guy... No, I'm not talking about Mary Cheney's lesbian porn novel, The Sisters. I'm talking about iScooter's book. Remember that book? This was the book where he was writing about, medieval Japan. And he crafted a scene wherein a 9-year-old girl was put in a cage with a bear and repeatedly sodomized by the bear so that she wouldn't mind later being a prostitute. Now there. Because, you see, in ancient Rome, it is said that someone who did something similar to what iScooter did would be put in a bag with a fox and have it tied off, and they'd just throw him in the Tiber River. We are so much more civilized than the ancient Romans, aren't we? But no, I couldn't help thinking about the scene in his filthy little book where he... imagines a 9-year-old girl put in a cage with a bear that would repeatedly have sex with the child. And I'm thinking, let the punishment fit the crime. But it is obstruction of justice, and it is 2 counts of perjury, and it is 1 count of lying to the FBI, and he is guilty. And the one that means the most is the obstruction of justice. because, you know, well, we'll have some audio here in a second of the White House reaction to Scooter Libby conviction. And there's a question you'll hear asked, well, you know, did the vice president... No, no, he was going over to the Senate policy planning lunch buffet smorgasbord thingy, no, he didn't say anything. You know, no. See, things are beginning to come together. Yesterday we had the story about the blood clot in his leg. And today we've got the verdict. Share something with you I didn't have time to get to last night by way of email. From a listener talking about Cheney going, and he's going to be on blood thinners for the next year or so. Email wrote, you know, Bob, blood thinners have this annoying side effect. Blood once treated with them doesn't clot as it should. Should poor five deferment Dick praying his shin against a bed rail, why, he could develop a hematoma the size of a regulation football. Ooh, not a good day for old Darth. Should it ever happen, I'll send flowers. With a little luck, said bouquet's decorative ribbon would be black. Leave the nightlight on, Dick. Wouldn't want you to miss that bed rail. So we had the story about Dick Cheney and his blood clot of mass destruction yesterday. Today the verdict comes out, and one of them is in fact a conviction for obstruction of justice. Obstruction of justice. Where have I heard of that before? Oh, wait a minute. That was part and parcel of the unraveling of the Nixon administration, wasn't it? Yes, yes, as a matter of fact, it was. So I imagine Dick can probably feel his heartbeat in his left calf right now. And he's thinking seriously about spending more time with the family. Because this could be the drip, 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 drip. If only our elected Democratic representatives have the guts to take it and run with it and do something with it and give a damn about justice. And by the way, the conviction was no sooner out than Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader, had already called on George W. not to pardon Scooter Libby. And this being reported by ABC News, that moments after the guilty verdict came down, Harry Reid called on President Bush to promise not to let Libby off the hook with a presidential pardon. Reid's words, quote, I welcome the jury's verdict. It's about time someone in the Bush administration has been held accountable for the campaign to manipulate intelligence and discredit war critics. Louis Libby has been convicted of perjury, but his trial revealed deeper truths about Vice President Cheney's role in this sordid affair. Now President Bush must pledge not to pardon Libby for his criminal conduct. I hate to be a cynic, but my only question is how Harry Reid will find a way to apologize for saying that. Because you kind of know that he will. So, congratulations, Scooter. You probably got some people killed with what you did, outing a deep cover CIA agent like you did and all. There's probably widows now, thanks to what you did, you slime bag, you scum, you filth, you human putrid garbage, Scooter Libby, you. And frankly, any prison they send you to will be far too good for you, Scooter Libby. Assuming they send you to one, and you don't... wait, look! Oh, my God, it just hit me. Guess where the appeal will lie? That's right, to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, you remember, you know who's on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, don't you, Sunshine? Why, Judge David Sentell sits on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, the same guy that found the technicality that let Oliver North off the hook. Oh, I hate it when reality intrudes in my celebration. All right, we're going to come back. We've got some audio from the White House response, and we'll run that. But we're going to take a break real quick. When we come back, we'll do some audio and some phone calls. The phone number is 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, Head On. Email comes in to bob@headonradio.com. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is The Horn, America's liberal voice.
That there's rich folks eating in a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha! Uh-huh.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Born through a party in the county jail. The prison band was there and they began to wail. The band was jumping and the joint began to swing. You should have heard the knocked out jailbird sing.
See, this is this is too difficult. I'm sitting here and I'm trying to. You want to come up with some sort of Scooter Libby lyrics? Anybody want to take a hand at writing Jailhouse Rock with Scooter as the central character? You're welcome to do it. There's got to be some brilliant stuff in there. I just didn't have enough time to do it on the fly. I mean, and many thanks to our good friend Billy Shears for the tune there. Good God, I love the way you people think. Let's go to the phones. Jim is calling from a remote, undisclosed location. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Oh, I'm just happier than a clam.
Well, good. You know, unfortunately, I feel that Mr. Libby's conviction will probably be overturned, if not by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, but if it goes to the Supreme Court, that's a possibility there, too. But what I would like to see happen is for Bush to pardon him. I would love that, because if that were to happen, it would just absolutely blast him right off the face of the earth. It would have the same effect on the next elections that Ford pardoning Nixon had. You see, that's
you don't
one
think
reason
they've
I
learned
never
that?
Get all upset about Ford for pardoning Nixon was because it was such. It helped the Democrats so much back in the 70s when he did it.
Yeah, but it did such inimitable harm to our system of justice. The idea of a preemptive pardon is still horrifying.
Well, you know, Paris is worth a mass, as far as I'm concerned, and anything that would put Bush and Cheney in greater jeopardy, the one thing that could do it would be to pardon this man. Do you follow my logic?
No, I do follow. I do follow. I just don't. I don't know. I think the political climate is different in this country now, Jim. And I don't know if the media would let the American people have that level of outrage that they had in the 1976 election cycle.
Oh, I believe they would. I believe they would. I certainly do believe they would. If not more, it would be even more. It would be even greater. I can guarantee you. I mean, it would give him something to dine out on for the next 6 months. If not beyond that. I mean, just to think of what would happen. I mean, let's face it, Fox News and the Bush White House, an asteroid couldn't budge those people if it hit them. But something like this could. So I hope Bush is stupid enough to pardon this man. And I hope Louie doesn't see a day in jail. It would be worth it to see the deleterious effect it would have on Bush and his administration.
Well, you know, I don't know, Jim, if this is binding or if it's correct or not. The other effect of a blanket pardon would be that Louis Libby could then be compelled to testify against Dick Cheney.
Well,
did you ever think about that?
Yeah, I have. I mean, you know, let's face it. Like I say, Paris is worth a mass.
Well, you know, that just occurred to me because a blanket, and somebody else can correct me if they know better. Blanket immunity like that, he would not have any way of avoiding grand jury testimony.
Well,
and he would have to testify in a manner that was consistent with the testimony he has already given under oath.
There you have it, exactly.
Oh, I bet Dick. I bet Dick Cheney's little DDT really is kind of throbbing right now.
This has not been a good day for Mr. Cheney. Not at all. And I hope that Bush will make it worse. I mean, while the Democrats are begging him not to pardon Scooter Libby, I will be begging Bush to pardon him.
Well, see, I'm beginning to
get him out of jail.
Well, you know, I'm beginning to wonder, Jim. I wonder if Harry Reid coming out and saying don't pardon him was a case of please, Brer Fox, don't throw me in that old briar patch.
I don't know, but I'll guarantee you one thing. if only Bush would be stupid enough to do it, I pray for
Well, if there's a man on earth who is, he's the guy for the job, isn't he?
I would think so, and if he were to do it, that would really open the floodgates up for not only Cheney, but everything about it. It's just incredible. You know, sometimes you have to weigh tactics versus strategy. You know, I'd rather lose this battle with Libby and win the final war against Bush any day, if you follow what I'm saying.
I do indeed, and there's a website out there called impeach07.org, and I like what they're doing. David Swanson is involved with it, and he's a very, very dedicated activist to this cause. I think maybe I'll have to write him a note and wonder, sort of wondering aloud as we are now, Jim, whether or not a pardon for Scooter Libby might be the best thing coming, because that would open up the floodgates on Dick Cheney, wouldn't it?
Exactly. And if Bush is too stupid enough, if he's that stupid, then please go right ahead, sir. I mean, Scooter Libby is just a small fish.
Yeah, there's other stuff out there as well. There's vote2impeach.org. This is a real movement.
I know. But, this plus what's going on in Iraq and the things that are coming out about Iraq, it's just going to be too much for people to handle.
You used the, and I did too, went back to the Nixon era for comparison and contrast on this. It must be borne in mind that the beginning and the end for Richard Nixon was Spiro Agnew's decision to quit the camp.
Well, Nixon told Agnew if he didn't quit, he was going to have him killed. That's a fact. I remember that. I was a young man when that happened. I don't know how you were, but I remember very well what happened. And I remember how happy I was when Ford pardoned Nixon, because I knew what it would do for the Democrats.
That's true. But by the same token, how much did it do for the Democrats? Four years later, we got the October surprise, and we got Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, but that was due to some more dirty tricks and things like that. We have a short memory about a lot of things, but I mean, you can't have it all. What can I say? We had a lot of things that went on then, but nonetheless, we will see. We will see.
I don't think George is going to run out and pardon him off the bat.
Won't. He wouldn't give
because he does. He does have David Sentell sitting there on the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeal. This is the guy who, or not Fourth, the D.C. Circuit. This is the guy who let Ollie North off the hook. This is the guy who gave us Ken Starr. I mean, the David Sentell is just a sleazy right-wing Republican operative who happens to have a black robe.
Well, I mean, like I say, when Libby walked out of that courthouse this morning, he knew very well that he would not ever spend one day in jail, one way or the other. And you know it, and I know it.
Although stranger things have happened, I mean, Jack Abramoff is doing time, so...
Well, we'll see. You never can tell who they're willing to throw and what sentence he'll get, you know.
Well, when it comes to George Bush, they will throw everything. Because from the beginning of this administration forward, the one understanding that everyone had was that George Bush would be protected at all costs.
Mm-hmm. Well, that might just not be possible. It just might not be possible.
Well, I think this is a beginning.
That's
what makes the obstruction of justice conviction so important, Jim.
Right. I mean, it might not be the beginning of the end, but it could be the end of the beginning.
It could indeed. Thank you, Jim.
Yes,
have yourself a great night.
You too. Good night.
Bye now. This is a chess match. It might very well turn out that Harry Reid telling George Bush to promise not to pardon him is pure Brer Rabbit. Because that's the kind of personality George Bush has. Whatever you tell George Bush not to do, he will do. It's probably been that way since potty training. Don't go to war, George. Don't attack Iraq, George. Billions of people said that. He did it anyway. Don't pardon Scooter, George. I might just pardon him just to see him have a fit. Because I'm smarter. Okay, so we got a break coming. When we come back, we'll take a listen. A couple of interesting people. You have simply got to hear, if you haven't heard already, you have simply got to hear the White House spokesperson. And they didn't get this is not Tony Snow. This is somebody else, like Tony Snow's little intern or something. Oh, this is fun stuff. And that's what we'll go to when we come back. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Voices from the grave saying loud and clear, gotta stop Bush, gotta stop Bush. Voices from the grave saying loud and clear, gotta stop Bush, gotta stop Bush. Remember those who have died by hands, remember those in far off lands, the innocent child, the newborn babe, a mother told, all thrown away. Voices from the grave saying loud and clear, gotta stop Bush, gotta stop Bush.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. Just stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you know the University of Nebraska is a leader in the landscape of computer science and business education? Our J.D. Edwards Honors Program combines business strategy with next-generation computer software. That's how you teach leaders for the 21st century. I'd call that thinking outside the box. There is no place like Nebraska. The University of Nebraska, Lincoln.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
Thank you.
All right, 20 minutes before the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid, and like I said, I keep saying, we got the audio. We're going to go to the audio. Yeah, let's do it now. Shame on me. I don't have this woman's name. But, sure, listen to the words of the White House response. But listen to the tone of voice. Well, I'll tell you what's on my mind after we run it. Hit it, Agnes. Well, sometimes things don't go quite as well.
Obviously, we have a verdict.
There we go.
From the jury in the Scooter Libby trial.
Speak.
We start off by saying that the president was informed by, he was in the Oval Office. He saw the verdict read on television. Chief of Staff Josh Bolton and Counselor Dan Bartlett were with him. He said that he respected the jury's verdict, that he was saddened for Scooter Libby and his family, and that the White House direction from here on out, and I know that there's going to be a lot of disappointment with this, but there is an ongoing criminal proceeding. Scooter Libby's attorneys just announced that they are going to ask for a new trial, and that they are going to, failing that, they would appeal the verdict. And so our principled stand of not commenting on an ongoing legal investigation is going to continue. I know that's going to be very disappointing for many, but that is the decision that we're going to, that we've made, and the decision and the practice that we're going to continue on the way forward.
Let me ask you about some of the congressional reactions.
Sure.
You have Senator Reid saying that President Bush must pledge not to pardon Libby for his criminal conduct. What's the reaction to that?
Well, I'm aware of no such request for a pardon, and as with as is afforded to all Americans, there is a process that is followed in which to apply for a pardon, and I don't think that speculating on a wildly hypothetical situation at this time is appropriate.
So you're not closing the door to it, you're leaving the door open to
I'm not commenting on a hypothetical situation. I think that that is the best way to respond to that. I think that there's a process in place for all Americans if they want to receive a pardon from a president, be that any president that is in office, and I'm aware of no such request.
Would the president be receptive to that?
It is a hypothetical situation. I've never even brought it up with him.
Has the president talked to the vice president yet?
No. The vice president was on his way to the Senate policy lunch. I believe that's what's happened. That was this afternoon. And so the president was in the Oval Office ready for his lunch. The vice president was on his way to the Hill, so he didn't get a chance to see him.
Does the president feel like there's any responsibility to figure out a way to talk about this in a way that doesn't prejudice or jeopardize any ensuing legal process? And still say something to the American people about this case?
I think we've given it a lot of thought and try to find out a way to sort of answer the mail on the requests that are coming from not just the media, but also for the American people. However, the legal advice that we get from our counsel's office and the request that we had from the parties in the case was that we not comment on it while there was an ongoing criminal matter. And since that is still the case, I think that the best thing I can offer you right now is what the president's reaction is, that he respected the verdict, he respects the jury, and we're just not going to be able to comment on the beyond it.
Oh, stop. The spokesperson's name is Dana Perino. Where was Tony Snow? Tony couldn't take the heat on this one? Or was Tony in the damage control meeting being fiercely, fiercely debated even as Dana Perino got shoved out onto the stage? Yeah, go out there, honey. Knock him dead, huh? Okay, like, I'm out here, and I'm going to tell you about the White House's, you know, response, like, you know, okay? Like, it's really gnarly that, like, that Scooter Libby got convicted, right? Okay? I mean, it's gross. Now, this is... I am not. No. I hate upspeak. I think that's the official term for that thing where you end all your sentences like they were questions, you know? Upspeak. It's like a cancer in the spoken word of this nation. And it tells you in this instance just a little bit about how absolutely desperate the White House is because they can't get Tony out there. They are spinning so fast that they're likely to turn into butter. Like that old story. This is just... you'd like to say hilarious, but it's not hilarious. It's indicative of the desperation that the White House feels right now as they circle the wagons. You know? I mean, like, I'm right, right? Cock me with a spoon. Let's go to the phones, okay? Talk to Susan. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, but I'm going to reach through this phone and whoop you.
Hey, like, gnarly.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Oh, it makes me crazy. Anyway, that's not the reason I called. The reason I called is what you were talking earlier about Fox News and the way they reported this story.
Yeah. Scooter Libby not guilty of lying to investigators.
Right. Although, if you look at the verdict, he was guilty of lying to the investigators, only he wasn't guilty about lying to them on one subject.
Right.
Really weird. Anyway, I know this is going to date me a lot, but this book, this bears a distinct resemblance to another couple of news agencies by the name of TASS and Pravda.
Glorious five-year plan in year four.
Right.
Gloriously.
Never mind the fact that the people are starving to death.
Right.
They didn't report that part.
Well, no. At this point, I don't think I don't think Fox has the credibility of TASS or Pravda. They're gone somewhere lower than that now, haven't they?
What concerns me is that nobody seems to be aware of the model that they have chosen for their news organization, and that is the Soviet Union. You know, these people that used to be so anti-communist, they are parroting a communist news organization. Troops, pay attention here.
No kidding.
It makes me wonder what else they're doing, because, let's face it, in a lot of their other shenanigans, what else could you call this but the Sovietization of the United States?
I think it does. It crosses it's not just journalism, it's political, it's social. Well, you know, we're in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And we're stuck there.
And I don't know about you, but as a woman and as a Wiccan, I don't particularly want to be there. That'll get me killed.
It's going to get a lot of people killed.
Yeah.
Doggone it. Susan, how do you stop it then? We're pointing it out. People are hearing it. They're recognizing it as truth.
Keeping the pressure on, not only on the administration, go after Fox. Go after Murdoch.
I found out today that after Ann Coulter's ugly little hate fest the other day, about four major corporate sponsors pulled their ads off of her website.
Good for them.
Is that where it begins to change? Is it advertising revenue? Remember, Fox News hemorrhaged money for about 10 years. And as far as I know, Fox Entertainment Programming still is the life support system on which Brit Hume feeds.
And their ratings are tanking.
How can anybody look at it? I see things like these fonts at the bottom of the screen, the shots that were captured by our buddies over at WD40.com, and I immediately have to think about, because I know this person exists, and I know it's more than one person, it's thousands, it may be millions of people who never watch anything but Fox, Susan.
And they think it's the God's honest truth. What we need to do is not only go after Fox, we need to go after Murdoch. If he is such a staunch anti-communist, what in the world is he doing parroting a communist news organ?
I think that's a valid question. I am reminded of the book that our good friend Rick Goodner wrote called, he sort of coined a psychological diagnosis for these people who watch Fox and believe it. He calls it, I believe, a shared psychotic disorder. And he calls it the Fox syndrome.
Yeah.
And see, the thing is, though, Susan, we should be able to tune in a news channel and believe the facts, because that's what news is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about the facts.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. We need to go after Fox because they're not putting up the facts.
They're not, but by the same token, let's... I've got another story right here with regard to the Los Angeles Times. And it's amazing. Apparently, one of the people who runs the investor group that owns the Los Angeles Times and runs the Tribune Company, who owns the LA Times, has made a statement that the LA Times should not be involved in reporting whether or not the Iraq War was right or wrong, or anything else was right or wrong. That people look to the LA Times for news about Anna Nicole Smith.
Oh, good grief! And they wonder why we have a tendency to go ballistic. I mean, geez, Louise. I think the best thing that we can do, and personally, I think we ought to be trying to get it done as soon as possible, enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act.
You mean in terms of media ownership?
Start busting these conglomerates up. When you have one person owning... when you have five people owning everything, then it's very, very easy to go to the extreme right, or the extreme left, for that matter. When you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, it's not so easy. These news organizations and TV stations and radio stations should not be owned by conglomerates.
I share your sympathy. I share your sense in that. I can't imagine. Then again, look, the reversing of any Sherman Act sort of things has been trends has been part and parcel of this entire administration. That's why you see all the broken up baby bells getting back together again. We're heading toward a telecommunications monopoly. That's part of what people are concerned about with net neutrality, which, interestingly, isn't exactly on the Congress's radar.
That we need to make it on the Congress's radar, because that's, hey, that's one of the few things. Oh, and by the way, we need to start stomping all over our Congress people, because there is a thing where the Copyright Office is trying to award the music companies everything they wanted, which would make it almost impossible for these internet radio stations, although we're talk, we wouldn't be in that category. But
oh yes, we would. Now, I know the story you're talking about, establishing royalties for the playing of music, and yeah, there may come a day when I have to whistle the bumper music, and I'd better whistle an original composition, or the RIAA will be on my butt.
I have been protesting against RIA for, well, ever since the Metallica suit. I have not bought a CD. I have bought one CD, and that was the Dixie Chicks' latest CD, and I bought that out of protest. I do not buy CDs ever because of RIA. And I used to shell out a bundle of money on CDs. I listen to what I have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've been a big, and still am a big purchaser of music.
I won't do it.
But there's a question that has to be dealt with somewhere along the way as to, oh, I don't know. I'll tell you the truth. I tried one of those Microsoft Zune media players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, MP3 players. I was fascinated. You load their software, and they offer you two different types of things. One, the typical dollar a song, you can buy the song sort of download. The other thing they offer you is a pass.
Yeah.
You can listen to and download any song on the service.
Uh-huh.
For as long as you continue to pay for the monthly pass.
Right.
The minute you quit paying for the pass, the music goes away and won't play on your player anymore.
Yeah. That's why I prefer iTunes, because when you buy the song, it's yours.
Well, no, the Microsoft offers that as well. You can straight up buy the song.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to just subscribe and keep on subscribing, you can. It winds up to being, at least on the front end, a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
But that's where we're headed with all of this. I was looking at the schedule that was published of the webcast royalty. 0.0019 cents per performance.
Uh huh.
Or $0.0019 per performance, which I guess it means one tenth of 1 cent per performance, or two tenths, whatever. And they define performance as one person listening to one piece of music.
Yeah, I don't even buy iTunes. Even I go in and I listen to their little fractions of music, but I won't buy it. Because, first of all, all of this stuff that RIA says they're doing, none of it benefits the artist. They're still getting ripped off. The only people it benefits is RIA, the record company, these conglomerates. We're back to Sherman Antitrust again.
There's nothing really new in that, though, Susan, because, after all, if you go all the way back to anywhere in the history of recorded music, the number of artists who have been ripped off by the record company is proverbial, and it's a paradigm. Oh, yeah. And it's more often the rule than it is the exception.
Oh yeah. Anyway, we're getting up to the top of the hour, and I'm going to let you go. So you have a real nice night.
All right. Thank you, Susan. You too.
Okay,
talk
bye-bye.
To you soon. So we've got next. Next hour, your phone calls, of course, are always welcome. Don't think that you can't break in on any of this, because this is not ego-driven radio. This is conversation radio, and I'm more interested in what you have to say in many instances than what I have to say. So chime right in. 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Former Chief of Staff to Vice President Dick Cheney, Lewis Scooter Libby, was found guilty today of obstruction, perjury, and lying to the FBI. The agency was investigating how a CIA operative's name was leaked to the media. Libby faces up to 30 years in prison when he's sentenced June 5th. In Baghdad today, insurgents killed at least 115 Shiite pilgrims heading into the holy city of Karbala for a religious celebration. Two suicide bombers mixed with the crowd then set off their explosives. That attack came one day after U.S. forces suffered their deadliest day in a month. Nine American soldiers were killed in explosions north of Baghdad. While in a speech to the American Legion today, President Bush told the crowd there were some encouraging signs in the security crackdown inside Baghdad. He also pushed congressional Democrats to approve his recent spending request to further fund the war. The Senate has voted to allow 45,000 airport screeners to unionize if they wish. Despite a veto threat from the White House, the Senate voted to give screeners the same union rights as Border Patrol, Customs, and Immigration agents. Critics say unionizing could compromise national security. In southern Afghanistan, NATO today launched its most important mission since the U.S. invasion in 2001. Operation Achilles' Heel has mobilized 55,000 Afghani and coalition troops. They're targeting militants and drug dealers. The U.S. says Afghan opium production has hit record levels last year. The Taliban announced today it's kidnapped a Briton and two Afghans. The three captives are thought to be reporters. At a court-martial in Germany, an army medic who refused a second tour in Iraq for moral reasons has been convicted of desertion. While in Indonesia, two strong earthquakes struck this morning on the island of Sumatra. At least 82 people were killed. One of the tremors, 6.6 magnitude, was strong enough to be felt over 200 miles away in Singapore. In Somalia, war has broken out in Mogadishu. Mortar fire interrupted a welcoming ceremony for Ugandan peacekeepers. Heavy fighting then moved to government offices and the presidential palace. And U.S. markets rebounded today following upturns in other world markets. We'll have those closing numbers for you later in the newscast. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, next.
Heads up, crew. This is Captain Mike from Bombardier's Lounge, World War II Big Band Jazz. I've got a book for all of you crew members interested in World War II in the air. Its title is Letters Home, Memoirs of a World War II Troop Carrier Pilot by Frank G. Hathaway. Hathaway's book is dedicated to the air crewmen who lost their lives in the Southwest Pacific, 1942 to 1946, while flying their unarmed C-46s and C-47s over the jungles, the ocean and mountains in New Guinea and the Philippines. In his book, Frank talks in his letters home about his experiences flying as a pilot with the 6th Troop Carrier Squadron, the first squadron of troop carrier planes in the Southwest Pacific. This is a book you're really going to enjoy having in your library. It's available at Amazon.com. Get this book. Ask for it by name. Letters Home by Frank G. Hathaway, published by Trafford Publishing. That's an order.
Eating a high-fat diet desensitizes your brain to appetite-suppressing hormones, making it biologically more difficult to lose weight. That's the finding of scientists in Oregon who say the appetite-suppressing hormone leptin is blocked in the hypothalamuses of people who eat high-fat diets. That may set in motion a cycle that promotes obesity. Two cave divers have discovered the longest underwater cave system in the world. It stretches 95 miles under Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. The two divers spent 4 years exploring the area. In a Washington hearing last night, environmentalists, hunters, and oil company executives testified in a hearing investigating whether polar bears should be placed on the endangered species list. On Capitol Hill, congressional leaders are considering legislation requiring clear and complete disclosure of fees companies charge to manage employees' 401k plans. Of the nearly 50 million Americans invested in those plans, less than 20% understand how fees negatively affect their returns. And former Federal Reserve Alan Greenspan told reporters there was a one-third probability the U.S. would see a recession this year. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was up 157 points, the NASDAQ up 44, the S&P up 21. There's QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty, then. Let's continue on with a little bit more of a look at what the whole shooter-ready conviction issue. I'm looking at the CNN coverage, the written coverage, and we're gonna listen to this juror. His name is Dennis Collins. He, of course, is a Washington resident, a D.C. resident. This is the part I don't get, though. This is a direct quote from the CNN story. Quote, Dennis Collins, a Washington resident and self-described registered Democrat, said he and fellow jurors found that passing judgment on Libby was unpleasant. Why is it necessary to describe him as a self-described registered Democrat? Is this code? Is this how the media works now? Shh. They only convicted Libby because it was a bunch of Democrats who were out to get him. What's the point? The guy says what he says. Agnes, if you could please, I would sincerely appreciate it if you could cue up Mr. Dennis Collins and let's. Instead of him being a self-described registered Democrat, Dennis Collins, a card-carrying communist.
The primary thing that convinced us on most of the accounts was the alleged conversation with Russert. It was either false, which some of us believe it never happened, or if it did happen, Mr. Libby saying that he was surprised to hear about Mrs. Wilson, we had about 34 post-it pages. And by post-it, I don't mean the little ones you stick on. I mean, they were like two and a half feet by 2 feet. And they were filled with all the information that we distilled from the testimony, and we took a long time to do that. We took about a week just to get all these little building blocks there. And what we came up with was that Mr. Libby either was told by or told to people about Mrs. Wilson at least 9 times. And in a period of time that it would be extremely... I mean, we were told he had a bad memory, and we actually believed he did. But Mr. Hanna's testimony that he would forget from morning to evening who told him something was contradicted by Mr. Hanna's testimony that said he had an incredible grasp of details and arguments, so that even if he forgot that someone had told him about Mrs. Wilson, who had told him, it seemed very unlikely that he would have not remembered that about Mrs. Wilson. So we had all these conversations, the dates when Grossman contacted him about, you know, he had gone to Grossman, said, would you find out about Mr. Wilson? And Grossman came back, and I think those of you who were at the trial heard, he said, well, I thought it was an interesting tidbit that his wife worked at the CIA as well. We have the Joe Wilson article with notation from the vice president on the page saying, was this just a, you know, did the wife just send him on this, whatever it was, junket or something? There were just so many of those things that it was just very hard not to believe that he could remember it on a Tuesday and then forget it on a Thursday and then remember it 2 days later. Now, having said that, I will say that there was a tremendous amount of sympathy for Mr. Libby on the jury. It was said a number of times, what are we doing with this guy here? Where's Rove? Where's, you know, where are these other guys? We're not saying that we didn't think Mr. Libby was guilty of the things we found him guilty of, but that it seemed like he was, to put it Mr. Wells' point, but he was the fall guy. He was, now he made bad judgments. And
was he the fall guy for Vice President Cheney? Was that the belief of the jury?
The belief of the jury was that he was tasked by the vice president to go and talk to reporters. We never made any, you know, came to any conclusion, or we never even discussed it, whether Cheney would have told him what exactly to say.
But what about the motive, as far as the jury's feelings about the motive for Scooter Libby to lie to the FBI and lie to the grand jury? Did the vice president, Mr. Cheney, come up in your discussions about Mr. Libby's motive?
Was he covering for the vice president?
We actually never discussed that, because that was not what we were assigned to do.
What do you think?
I really don't know. One thing about being on this jury, the people who were on this jury, there were some incredibly good managerial type people who just took everything apart into the smallest piece, put it in the right places, and it got to a point where opinion had very little to do with it. You just came to this conclusion that, wow, okay, here it is right before us.
Why did it take 10 days then? What was it about the process that took the time?
Because we took every count and went back over all the testimony. And as we went back, we'd have all these different sheets, you know, motivation to tell the truth, motivation to lie, believability, state of mind. So we never got to the point of doing, like, we didn't start to do a straw vote right away. So, what do you think? Well, it was too big. It was too much. It was too important. We just didn't do that. So that's why it took so long.
Okay. So, the magic C word? Cheney? He makes it pretty clear, doesn't he? They seem to be convinced that Cheney had his hand in it. They didn't know how. They weren't presented adequate evidence of exactly how it was happening. But it was pretty clear that, to them at least, 12 people tried and true who were judging only the facts that they had. They were only the trier of fact. They weren't judging on whether the right or wrongness of the law or public policy or White House policy or anything. They're just judging the facts. And to them, the facts were clear that Cheney had a hand in it. I think this issue is far from closed. Of course, the things that we've already mentioned, what will happen on appeal, David Santel being there and being one of the judges on the case doesn't make you feel good. But I promise you, it is not a happy night over at the United States Naval Observatory and Vice Presidential Residence. Let's go to the phones. David joins us from Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Well, hello there.
How's it going?
Well, it's going really well, and, you know, I've got a detail I need to tidy up from a week and a half ago, but I'll do that in a minute. But let me ask you a question. Isn't it unusual for a juror, you know, like 20 minutes after he, you know, drops the hammer on a guy, isn't it unusual for a juror to stand there and just, bare his heart, swing his, you know, just absolutely just tell everything about the jury room?
You know, up until the O.J. trial, it was almost unheard of.
Does that in any way, I mean, can something a juror says in that situation turn out, should a retrial be granted? Can those sorts of things come back to influence a second trial?
If I was defense counsel, David, I would certainly rely on them. Because among other things, you can go back into court and you can say, well, you know, based on the statements that he gave outside the courthouse, it's clear that the jury was confused and didn't understand the evidence that the defense had put forward. Now, will that fly in a motion for retrial? I kind of doubt it.
You know, some things stick to the proverbial wall, some things don't. But, you know, I would certainly want to throw it up there and see if I could get a few minutes out of it. I'm sorry. I've been on jury duty, and after jury duty, I wanted to start smoking again, but I didn't. But I can guarantee you that I put together a very well-crafted 12 to 14 hours off from the world around me via alcohol. I'm sorry, I put together a darn therapeutic drunk to forget about that. The last thing I would want to do is stand in front behind a microphone and say, well, you know, no way. Oh.
What I think is important out of what this fella says, David, is him dropping the hammer on Cheney. Or at least that's what it sounds like to me.
You know, in a way, I'm sorry. I'm as badly as I want to see America, figuratively, get a rope, two or three of them, frankly. I think the White House came out pretty well on this because the prosecutor has already said this is the end of the line. This goes no further. So five deferment Dick can relax. President Bush can relax. If their little fella, their little office munchkin, if Mr. Libby just won't start talking about other things involving other people, like five deferment Dick, they're in about as good a shape as anybody could be for the, based on the malfeasance, lying, cheating, stealing that they have done. So, me personally, I think there'll be a guilty plea. I think Scooter will drop this thing about a new trial. There'll be a guilty plea in like October. And before sentencing in January, in December, right after the election, there'll be a pardon that turns that little guy into a saint. There's no way. Either that or he'll be killed.
It is worth remembering that it is Bush family policy to pardon people who could do you harm at the last possible moment. So, you know, maybe that is the scenario. A pardon in, say, December 2008.
Yep. They want this wrapped up. Scooter Libby will not be in prison outside of the Bush administration. He will either be dead or pardoned. I believe. He will be a non factor. Because I believe the little guy knows way too much for all of the people around the Bush crime family. That little guy knows way too much to be out there angry or in prison or abused. You're not going to let him go to prison. You know,
please remember, though, the process. Extrapolated out to roughly December 2008. By that time, David, this thing will have already been in front of U.S. District Court Judge David Santel and his gang of right-wing thugs on the D.C. Circuit. The Bushies may not have to lift a finger.
Well, yeah.
They didn't have to. The Bushies didn't have to lift a finger to see Oliver North get his bacon hauled out of the fire.
Exactly.
And it was, and please, I keep repeating this, and it's worth remembering, and I hope people will at least remember that I said this when it does come down. David Santel is that judge. I mean, there's a lot of bad judges in the United States, and we can start at the top with John Roberts and Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas and Scalia. But I mean, if you want to talk about the really fetid scum on the swamp, David Santel is at the head of the list, from Ken Starr to Oliver North to he did something vile and rotten just in the last couple of weeks, and I've forgotten what it was. But this guy is a shill. He takes marching orders. He does the bidding of his masters. He is, you know, he's revolting. And he will sit in judgment of I. Lewis Scooter Libby.
You know, but, you know, they're still not, the Bushistas still aren't satisfied. They just ran some more judges off the benches. You know, Domenici, wasn't it Pete Domenici that dropped a dime on some guy that...
This is a different purge. They're purging U.S. U.S. attorneys.
Oh, okay. Attorneys.
It was Pete Domenici. It was, there are 8 U.S. attorneys that have been canned.
But it's the same process. Install the judge that will act to satiate our wishes and eliminate the attorneys that probe too deeply and too fervently into areas where our nasty nature can be revealed, right?
Pretty much.
Same
process. And in particular, David, this one U.S. attorney was actually the model for the prosecutor in A Few Good Men, and that's the one that Domenici dropped the dime on.
Good God.
And the dime was also dropped by a Representative Heather Wilson.
Ugh.
Now, of course, Domenici's office and Wilson's office are all, you know, they're about neck deep in no comment.
Oh, yeah, and we would never do that. Well, I got to get something off my permanent record because inadvertently I put it on your permanent record. A week or 10 days ago, you were curious about Building 18 that's involved with the horrific Walter Reed situation. And I had bad information that I thought was good information. I mistook the real Building 18 for an older building that goes back to just after World War One, that had been used as a convalescence area for well thought of generals. You know, when General Friedlaff went in for a hip replacement and they wanted him to spend a week in a 5-star hotel, they went to this older building. So I had Building 18 confused with that. I misspoke to Bob, I misinformed Bob in an email, listeners. And Bob inadvertently said Building 18 was this old building, went back to almost World War One. Well, that's not it. Building 18 is really very close to Walter Reed. It used to be a motel. They pulled it into their system for overflow capacity, not planning for the horrific carnage that's been coming home. And so I misinformed Bob, and Bob trusted me and ran with it. So listeners, you know, no cookies at bedtime for me tonight.
But it doesn't change the fact of the horrors that would just vileness of Building 18. And apparently the setup of it is such that the guy who ran Walter Reed, who got canned, lived in something that you and I would be tempted to call palatial, right across the street.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, now we know that within sight of this god-awful Roach Coach Motel, where he was sending the nation's heroes. He was a block down the street in a palatial marble mansion built between the wars. Oh.
So I don't think your mistake is that great.
Well, I wanted to clear that up because I led you down a spot, and I didn't want the listeners to say, gee, Bob missed his homework on that one. Bob took a flyer on he trusted a listener, and the listener wasn't quite as sharp as he thought he was. So I wanted to get that one cleared up. But
Well, don't let it happen again.
I promise.
I mean, after all, if you start making mistakes, you're going to be we'll have to get you a job with CNN or maybe Fox.
No, I'm sorry, that would jeopardize my retirement money. You can't do it. I'd have to get up too early in the morning or stay up too late at night. I'll take it the way it is.
And we all need our beauty sleep.
At some point in time.
All right. Now, thanks, David.
I'm going to get out of the way, let somebody else have some fun. So, you know, I still think it would be really entertaining to hear about Scooter making some new friends in a real prison. Hi.
My name is Huggy Bear.
What's yours, little man? See you later.
I'm thinking Angola, Louisiana, but it ain't going to happen.
Oh, no. No. They wouldn't even fly him over that in a plane. See you later.
Later, David. Thank you.
You bet.
And on to our good buddy Bob in North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you still with us? Okay, I'm doggone it. Okay, well, you know, sometimes people can't wait. That's okay. Well, what we'll do then instead is we'll take our bottom of the hour break. And we'll come back and see if we can get away from Scooter. We'll get off the scooter. There, how's that? That's good. Yeah, okay. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is the horn. America's liberal voice on Boston Show.
There's a black man with a black cat. Damn black man, he's got an interstate running through his front yard. You know he thinks he's got a sinker. And there's a woman in the kitchen cleaning up the evening slime. And he looks at her and says, hey, darling, I can remember when you could stop a cloud. Oh, but ain't that America for you and me? Ain't that America something to see, baby? Ain't that America home on the free? Yeah, little pink houses for you and me.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. What would Jesus do? Workers struggling to form a union to improve their wages and working conditions at Catholic-owned Resurrection Health in Chicago believe that he would be with them in their fight for a union and justice on the job. Shirley Brown has been a housekeeper at Resurrection Health for 11 years. She makes $10.70 an hour.
You work in short staff. You get yelled and screamed at, you get disrespected, you don't have a voice in the workplace at all, period. The disrespect, the intimidation, and harassment, it is real, and that is what is happening in these hospitals, and it shouldn't be that way.
At a recent rally, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees gave a $1 million check to help fund the organizing effort at Resurrection. Shirley was thrilled.
It was so electrifying just to hear employees speak out about what's going on and then to have McAfee to give that $1 million check.
Shirley believes the Catholic Church-owned Resurrection Health needs to search its soul to end the suffering of its workers.
One lady brought me to tears when she told me that she was making $8.25 an hour and to have her two kids on her health insurance, that she had to pay $250 a month and she had to make a choice between feeding her family, keeping a roof over her head, or dropping her health insurance. And she had to drop her health insurance. That brought me to tears.
With Republicans vowing to filibuster the Employee Free Choice Act, labor has gotten the support of at least one very important senator. Jesse Russell reports.
Presidential candidate and Illinois Senator Barack Obama was in Illinois on Saturday morning vowing to make sure legislation that would make it easier for workers to join unions will pass the Senate. Obama told a gathering of 1,500 labor supporters, "We will pass the Employee Free Choice Act. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. We may have to wait for the next president to sign it, but we will get this thing done." President George W. Bush has already expressed that if the bill does reach his desk, it will be vetoed. Democrats are not expected to be able to win over the needed number of Republicans it would take to pass the bill with a veto-proof two-thirds majority. Senator Obama is running for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2008.
Rookie New York City firefighters are about to get a big salary boost. A new contract between the Uniformed Firefighters Association and the city will see first-year firefighters get a pay bump of nearly $10,000 a year. Firefighters who work in specialty areas like hazardous materials and special rescue will also get a 12% raise. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
The service sector is typically the champion when it comes to economic growth each month. But according to the Institute for Supply Management, business activity in the service sector slowed in February, down 5 points from the month before. Wall Street economists have been predicting a drop of only 2 points. Economists often look to the service sector for growth, as the manufacturing sector continues to struggle with slouching automotive and housing industries.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Great line from Life of Brian goes, nail him up! Nail him up, I say! Nail him in! But it ain't going to happen. It's not going to happen. Although, over at a couple of things I noticed over at Huffington Post, one individual, Jim Derrick, apparently was listening today when the Libby verdict came in. He was listening, not to the horn. He was listening to that drug-addled street drug junkie, Flush Flimball. And he writes, the Libby verdict was barely 60 seconds old before Rush was out there saying the jurors were D.C. residents with an axe to grind. They were hopelessly confused as to the charges. And last but not least, Clinton did it. And he writes, ah, sweet, sweet Clinton did it. The rich glass of Balvenie at the conservative feast of disinformation. Balvenie is a, and maybe I'm mispronouncing it, a darn fine scotch. And of course, defense number one, according to Jim Derrick, was blame the liberal bias of the judiciary. It extends to the jury as well. He said it's, after all, a trial being held in the liberal mecca of Washington, D.C. It would be impossible to find 12 people in D.C. who didn't have an axe to grind with this administration. It didn't help that the first juror to be interviewed happened to be an author who wrote a book about spying. How did the defense let this guy stay? Rush asked. Jeez. Let's see, another Rush defense, according to Mr. Derrick. No crime was committed because Valerie Plame wasn't a covert operative. Defense number three, since when is it a crime to defend yourself from people who are lying through their teeth? Now, I mention this to you because our good friends over at Media Matters for America anticipated all of it. Our good friend Carl Frisch sent along a very exhaustive, detailed list that's worth sharing with you because, to the extent, well, we've already heard the Flush begin it, and it will go the round and round the mulberry bush as the monkey chases the weasel. And Mr. Frisch over at Media Matters has got it all pinned down. No underlying crime was committed. That's that'll be a defense you hear. And he notes that a number of right-wing figures have stated that the nature of the charges against Libby prove that Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald's investigation of the CIA leak case found that no underlying crime had been committed. However, Fitzgerald explained that Libby's obstruction prevented him and the grand jury from determining whether the alleged leak violated federal law. You will also hear from Fox News across the alphabet soup networks that there was no for every three right wingers they have on, whether it be CNN, NBC, MSNBC, Fox, the bunch, it'll be about 3 or 5 to 1 conservative to normal person. And you will hear that there was no concerted White House effort to smear Joseph Wilson. Even though Fitzgerald said that in 2003, multiple people in the White House engaged in concerted action to, quote, discredit, punish, or seek revenge against Joseph Wilson IV. And, of course, it came to light this past August that then-Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage had his hand in it. He was Robert Novak's original source for exposing Valerie Plame. Now, this just goes on and on. And I would be willing to guarantee you will hear. Let's see, Libby was not responsible for the leak of Plame's identity. That because it wasn't he that discussed it with Novak, that therefore it couldn't. Now, Libby did discuss Plame's CIA employment with, there she is, Judy Miller, on several occasions prior to the publication of Novak's column naming Plame as a CIA operative. And then there will be the, well, he just left out some facts. Well, there's leaving out facts and then there's lying, isn't there? Most notably, the Washington Post said that Deborah Bond, FBI agent, didn't acknowledge disclosing the identity of undercover CIA officer Valerie Plame to reporters. Bond testified that Libby actually denied having leaked it. Even in the face of testimony from two reporters that he had. Or it'll be that Libby was trying to set the record straight, or that there's no evidence that the Plame leak compromised national security. You've probably heard this a million times if you've heard it once. Oh, well, you know, it was no big deal. Divulging a CIA agent's identity didn't harm national security. Well, daggummit. And I know, I've already begun hearing it. You're going to hear it. If you haven't already. The fact of the matter is, the CIA believed the leak was serious enough to warrant an investigation. And they went so far as to say that it put other agents' work at risk. Work life! They go on to note that Plame's identity had been protected by the CIA, quote, not just for the officer, but for the nation's security. And, of course, if all else fails, go to Flush Flembaugh defense number 3, that Fitzgerald is a partisan. The guy's a registered Republican, or has been. And then, last of all, as Carl Frisch over at Media Matters notes, the wingnuts will complain that Fitzgerald exceeded his mandate in his investigation of Libby. And no offense, but, you know, I seem to recall this sleazy gas bag named Ken Starr And I seem to recall that Ken Starr was appointed special prosecutor to look into a failed land deal. And the next thing we knew, well, where were we? That's right. We were hearing about a stained blue dress and a consensual sex act. And the investigation cost the American people $70 million. So, you know, just remember that when you hear some right-wing shill or some talking head news anchor question whether or not Patrick Fitzgerald exceeded the scope of his appointment. Let's go to the phones. Our friend Bob is back with us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, my friend.
How's it going?
Well, I had to kind of just dump you for a minute, okay?
Well, it happens.
Well, no, I dumped you. You didn't dump me. It wasn't like Mike Bloy, and, you know, hey, if you don't like what I got to say, you're going to dump me. No, not Bob Kincaid. You take him on head on, and that's what I love about you. You just say the truth. Sometimes these filthy little wogs that are running our country and running around trying to pretend they're something else can't get anything else straight. And, you know, today I, Scooter, got a sentence handed out. He got 4 out of 5of indictments, were convictions. That was a, you know, it was a momentous occasion. It's kind of like, you know, I can remember back in the day. You know, not too many people were in Vietnam in 1967 and 68 when I was. Not too many people were combat. I mean, I was with the 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines, Bravo Company, okay, weapons platoon, and I was in the fight in that hellhole, and not too many people on this continent or on this planet remember the horror of Vietnam. Not too many do, Bob. Unfortunately, your lovely, lovely lady has some remembrances of it. But,
well, we were both of us pretty young at the time.
Yeah,
but
hey, Bob, she had a lovely, lovely Vietnamese lady come home with her.
She told you that story. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, Bob, I'm family. I'm part of your
family. That's
true. You're part of mine.
That's right.
And guess what? The Head-On Network is family. Every person that really listens to you and understands where you're from and what you are and what you stand for, like your father, you are family to me, boy. You're like a son. Your lovely wife is like a daughter, and I've told her that many times. But guess what, people?
To us, Bob.
We are all children of Mother Earth, and we must. We don't have a choice here, people. We have to fight. We have to stand up and take them head on. And it's time to tell these Republicans, just get the hell out of my Congress. Get the hell out of my Senate. And get the hell out of my White House. Just go away. We're tired of you. We will give you peace. You can go down there to Crawford, Texas and fish in your presidential pond, but just stay the hell out of the rest of America, because this is our country. It belongs to the people, not to you. It doesn't belong to the Republicans. It belongs to the people of this nation, and we are both Republican, and we are Democratic, okay? Democratic, not Democrat, like they say it. So often, we are rats, Democrats.
Yeah, that's why they do it, Bob. That's why they do it.
They want to make us out to be something we are not. We are Democratic Americans, just like George Washington. In the beginning, he said, I hope, and I, you know, he prayed that this nation would always live in liberation. liberality. And that means liberalism, and that means Democrats, and we are liberal, and we do not back down. And I'm a...
Well, we don't, Bob. We don't. We're trying to teach the rest of the other liberals and other progressives to not back
stand
down,
up
too.
And fight. Yeah, like, hey, Bob, stand up and fight. I do not back down. I am... good God, son, forgive me, but I am... what's that word? P.O.'d?
Yeah.
I didn't say, you know, the bad word.
No, that's okay.
I'm just a little P.O.'d right now because I have listened to this Scooter Libby thing, and I've listened to the right wing, the right wing, the Nazi right wing. It's not right wing. It's Reich wing.
Right, yeah.
These people, these far Reich wingers, they have a vision for this nation. They want us to become Nazi Germany and that George W. Dyer Fuhrer, the leader, the Fuhrer, okay, would be the king of America. That's what these...
Hey, look, Bob, he's the one who said this would all be great if it was a dictatorship as long as I was the dictator. You know, we don't make that up about him. He said that.
It's a fact. It's not a conjecture.
Yeah, it is a fact, Bob. And you know what? Bob, it's part of the same process. It's the same old thing I was talking about last night. Oh, well, you know, he was only joking when he said that. Every time we catch them saying something mean or evil or hateful or disgusting, vile, rotten, you know, everything that comes out of their mouth, every time we catch them and we call them on it, Bob, oh, we were only joking.
Bob, these people don't joke. These people are serious. You know, they are convinced that they are the master race and that every other human being on this planet is not worthy, and they have to either destroy them or turn them into slaves. And I'm not going to be a slave to any one, any man, any human, any creature, anything on this earth or beyond this earth. I will never be a slave. And I want my Democratic friends to realize you are not a slave. It's time to get out in the streets and fight for whatever you believe in. It's not what I believe in. It's what you believe in. And I believe that this nation was founded as a democratic republic, not as a republican, whatever it's become, but it's republicans that think that they're trying to spread democracy. No, they're trying to spread republicanism. And Bob, like I said, I'm so P.O.'d right now. I'm frothing at the mouth. I want to fight. I want to...
Well, frothing is good. Doggone it, Bob, frothing is good sometimes.
I want to take them on like your father. Like your father. I want to take them on head on in the... Right there when he and his comrades took them on. Where was it? In the Leyte Straits? Or was it in... What, or the Gulf? Where was it?
Oh, no, all over, just all over the South Pacific. No, I understand what you're talking about, Bob.
Okay.
Frankly, this...
Was it at Peleliu? Was it at Iwo Jima?
But, sure, hey, all of that.
Yeah, see, that's where we took on fascism, Bob. We took them on in the Pacific, we took them on in Europe, and we destroyed that idea. But when we found out what we, the United States of America, had neglected before Nazi Germany rose to power and the Emperor of Japan and his minions went across the South.
And remember, Bob, remember, please, When we entered the Second World War, and I'm not trying to get all historical, but there was an organized effort. There was an organized effort, Bob, to undermine what we were doing fighting fascism.
Yes.
And that organized effort came almost exclusively from the Republican Party.
Yes, it did. And guess what that was called?
What was that?
The Bund. I remember... Well, no, there was this organized fascist party in America. It was called the Bund.
No, but I'm talking about the real, live, honest-to-God, you know, chicken dinners on the ground on Sunday Republican Party, the GOP.
Oh, okay.
They slammed and they slurred and they fought. You know, the same... When Social Security was passed, and you know I've said this before,
yeah,
but it bears repeating. When Social Security was passed by the Congress, it passed without one Republican vote.
Of course.
And when the United States had to enter the Second World War, the Republicans were standing there screaming that it was a mistake.
Mm-hmm. But guess what they were?
And they attacked FDR and FDR's administration, and they howled and they screamed for the entirety of the Second World War. There was not a patriot among them.
Guess what they were and are?
Fascists.
Fascists. They were Nazis then. They are Nazis now. They are fascists. They are those people that Mussolini created the word that, you know, that actually makes them come to life. And they are controlling our country. They're twisting this beautiful nation, this nation of the people and by the people and for the people into some twisted, ugly little fascist nation. And
you know,
I, for one, will not yield, Bob. I will not yield, and I will not bow to a Nazi fascist dictator type of government. I will fight, and I will die fighting. I will not quit. I will not yield. I will not give in. I want my people to realize I love you and I care about you, but I will not just let you be turned into slaves. Sorry about that. I was just
No. That's understandable.
But,
you know, that word, it's got a life of its own now, fascism. Okay? But it didn't always. Do you know where it comes from, Bob?
Yeah, I do.
It's a fascinating little story. Back in the days of oldie Rome,
there were these
guys called lictors,
yes.
L-I-C-T-O-R-S.
Yes.
And by the time of the Roman Republic, they had pretty much gotten to a point of ceremonial status.
Mm-hmm.
But they were a gang of people that walked around the elected officials and sort of made the crowds part. And they were thugs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And they carried a bundle of rods and axes.
Yep.
That went back to a nastier day in Rome's history. And that bundle of rods and axes was called the fasces.
The fasces, yes.
And once upon a time, they had actually used those rods and those axes to beat the snot out of people who got in the way of the leadership.
Exactly.
And it's thuggery. It's just pure, unmitigated, thoughtless brutality. And that's where that comes from. And, you know, you think, and when you think about that, and you think about the way that the Secret Service behaved,
mm-hmm,
and the Bush administration behaved during the 2004 election cycle.
Exactly.
I think about what they did during a taxpayer-funded event on the 4th of July, 2004, in Charleston, West Virginia, on the Capitol grounds, open to the public. And two people were thrown out for a T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
They were arrested. What the hell else are we supposed to call these people if they're not fascists?
They are.
That is fascism in its purest...
Bob, they are evil incarnate. They are evil incarnate. They exist as evil. And any piglican, and I don't even call them re-piglicans, they are pigs... with lickens on them. They're pigs. They have no courage. They're cowards. They run from you and they hide and then they, you know, it's like this. I'm not even sentient enough right now to call them with how much hatred I have for them. And they don't know how much I hate Pelicans. I hate them beyond life. I hate them eternally. I hate them more than God hates them. Because God hates evil and Pelicans are evil, Bob. They're beyond belief, and it is time. I mean, this Scooter thing. Scooter I? What is
Hi, Scooter?
Scooter? Bob.
I don't know.
He's not even a man. He doesn't have a name like Bob Kincaid or Gunny Bob. He don't have a name.
He's a scooter.
He's a scooter. He's a little scooter. He scoots around. He takes care of Georgie's little problems, and he hides, and he sneaks around in corners. He's a scooter.
But that's the thing. He's got this little juvenile nickname that betrays what an absolutely vicious political fixer he was.
Bob.
I mean, you know, no, Bob, we got, I mean, kind of go back and dig what it was they were trying in this case. This guy with a law degree, this guy with a first-class law degree, okay?
If you stop and think, all the people surrounding this little wog in the White House, this little monkey, this squatting chimp.
Right, but Bob, wait, stop.
They all have
those little
names.
Bob, wait just a minute. Dig deep for a second.
Yeah?
This guy has a law degree that most lawyers in the United States would absolutely ache for.
Absolutely.
He graduated well in his class.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to law school, you sit there for 3 long, painful, tortured years, and you memorize stuff, and you memorize cases, and you remember Hadley versus Baxendale.
But Bob,
okay,
you realize
and that stuff gets Bob, that stuff gets carved into your brain.
No, it doesn't.
I mean,
Bob,
you can't forget it. It doesn't go away. And this guy sits on the stand and says, "I can't remember on I couldn't remember on Tuesday, but I suddenly remembered on Friday." Bug spray,
Bob. I have a criminal justice degree. Okay, I studied law and I studied criminal justice. Okay. And then
you know what I'm talking about.
No. Stop for a moment. I studied it, and I've got a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, right? And then I took this psychological test, okay? And then
okay.
They said this guy has a high degree of what do they call it? A high degree of paranoid, or not paranoid, it's got to do with, I could just pull a trigger on anybody. Okay, it's like a psychotic disease, okay?
Well, apparently it's one you earn.
VA with, you know, and the VA, they gave me tests, too, and they came up and they said I had post-traumatic stress disorder from Vietnam. But, you know, I had studied for, you know, like 4 years after, you know, 4 years in college, and then they gave me this Minnesota multiple personality test, and they said I had a high degree of a deviant, some kind of psychological behavior or something. I couldn't even believe it, because I had a wife and 3 children at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had studied to become a law enforcement officer because I wanted to protect people of United States.
Yeah, because you were good enough to protect the President of the United States. You figured that ought
to
transfer. I'm
going to kill people, but I have this other thing that's haunted me since the day, since the 1968. Okay, and then 1969. I mean, I did another tour, but the thing is, I have. everybody else now, and we have to just stand up on our hind legs and say, don't use us anymore. Please, God.
Yeah,
and if there is a God in this universe, whatever people can hear my voice, I swear to whatever you believe as holy and sacred, I will fight these evil entities, these Republicans in whatever hell you can throw at me, because I've been there once and I'll go back again to fight them. But I'm sick to death to hear this nation just roll over like a lap dog and scratch my tummy. It's time we get out in the streets, people. It's time we get out and bang our pots and pans and hit them in the head with whatever you got, but come at them strong and don't quit until they either put you in a grounder. You know, it's kind of like back in the days of the, you know, the revolution. It's time we stood up again and said, this is our nation, and we are a democratic Republican.
Bob, you've said it well, and we got to quit. Talk to you later. Thank you. This is the Head On Radio Network. Time for the news. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Former Chief of Staff to Vice President Dick Cheney, Lewis Scooter Libby, was found guilty today of 4 of 5 counts he faced in the CIA leak trial. The jury did not believe Libby's defense that he had a bad memory. Instead, they convicted him of lying and obstruction. Libby's free until sentencing June 5th. The Pentagon will begin closed hearings, meaning no media allowed, on Friday for 14 detainees at Guantanamo Bay. Pentagon officials say the suspected 9/11 attack mastermind, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, will be one of the 14. All of those were transferred to Guantanamo Bay just last fall. President Bush addressed the issue of substandard medical care for U.S. veterans while he was speaking to a crowd at the American Legion today. He announced the appointment of former Republican Senator Bob Dole and Democrat Donna Shalala. She's the former Secretary of Health and Human Services. They're going to investigate the conditions at all the nation's military care facilities. In Baghdad, the death toll has risen to at least 149 after insurgents massacred Shiite pilgrims today as they were heading into the holy city of Karbala for a religious celebration. 2 suicide bombers mingled with the crowd, then set off their explosives. That attack came one day after U.S. forces suffered their deadliest day in a month. 9 American soldiers were killed in explosions north of Baghdad. The Senate has voted to allow 45,000 airport screeners to unionize if they want to. Despite a veto threat from the White House, the Senate voted to give screeners the same union rights as Border Patrol, Customs, and Immigration agents. Critics say unionizing could compromise national security. In southern Afghanistan today, NATO forces launched their most important mission since the U.S. invasion in 2001. It's called Operation Achilles Heel. It's mobilized 55,000 Afghani and coalition troops. Their targets, militants and drug dealers. And in Indonesia, 2 strong earthquakes struck this morning on the island of Sumatra. At least 82 people were killed. One of the temblors, 6.6 magnitude, was strong enough to be felt over 200 miles away in Singapore. And you're listening to the Quality News Network. We're going to have science and business news coming up next.
If you're a news junkie, there's a book you must read called Don't Mess with the Press, How to Write, Report, and Produce Quality Television News. Don't Mess with the Press, a textbook for journalism students and a handbook for people already in the business. While written primarily as an instructional guide, Don't Mess with the Press is also useful for people who follow the news closely, who want to understand how news decisions are made by quality reporters to ensure they get the best news coverage possible. Don't Mess with the Press was written by Tony Seaton, founder and executive producer of the Quality News Network. Tony began his broadcast journalism career in his teens, eventually covering Watergate, 6 elections, 5 space shots, and a wide range of general news. He also produced Barbara Walters' news interviews for ABC. Ordering information for Don't Mess with the Press can be found at qualitynewsnetwork.com. Visit our website and click on the Don't Mess with the Press link.
The Mega Millions jackpot has grown to $370 million, and that started a ticket buying frenzy. It's the biggest multi-state lottery jackpot ever. The drawing is tonight, and the chances of winning are about 1 in 176 million. Needing a high-fat diet desensitizes your brain to appetite-suppressing hormones. That makes it biologically more difficult to lose weight. That's according to scientists in Oregon who say the appetite-suppressing hormone leptin is blocked in the hypothalamuses of people who eat fat diets. That suggests that obesity might not be linked just to one's willpower. 2 cave divers have discovered the longest underwater cave system in the world, stretching 95 miles under Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. The 2 divers spent 4 years exploring the area. On Capitol Hill today, congressional leaders are considering legislation requiring clear and complete disclosure of fees companies charge to manage your 401k plan. Of the nearly 50 million Americans invested in the plans, less than 20% understand how fees negatively affect their returns. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones closed on an up note, actually. It was up 157 points to close at 12,208. The NASDAQ was up 44, the S&P up 21. There's more at qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay. Maybe we will move on from Scooter Libby here in a little bit. No, let's move on from Scooter Libby now because there's other stuff out there. And I know we talk a good bit about what we miss when other things are in the news, and that is, I think, a function of what? It's like the media have some sort of attention deficit disorder, or I don't know, maybe no, it's not ADD, it's OCD. It's obsessive compulsive disorder. They can only cover one daggum story at a time. So today it was Scooter Libby. And tomorrow probably it'll still be Scooter Libby. But something else will come along, and because day before yesterday it was Ann Coulter. And that's all there is. When there is literally a universe of a vital, relevant, thought-provoking information out there. There's a story that I had a week ago that I never got around to, and I can't find the link now. But it sort of weighed upon my conscience because, by God, it was one of those that should have been discussed. If for only a few minutes, just if for no other purpose than to remember that this young person walked on this planet for a while, a 12-year-old little boy. 12 years old. Who had infected teeth. And the infection ran to his brain, and he is dead now. In America, not in some filth-strewn back street of Calcutta, not in Africa, or the furthest reaches of the Amazon basin. By God, it happened in America. There's a little bit of a miniature tempest in a teapot brewing over a videotape that came out a couple of days ago of a couple of teenagers helping some little, like,
preschoolers smoke pot. And this kind of stuff deserves to be mentioned because, you know what? That's not the permissive liberal culture. And I don't have the story in front of me of the 12-year-old who died of this infection. But can we safely say that in a culture that cared more about its living children, that maybe we could help to avoid some of these stories ever becoming stories? 12-year-olds should be non-stories. 12-year-olds should live, in a country like this, live lives of things that 12-year-olds do. I've got a story here that was brought to my attention by our good young friend Cassie and her blog. And it is sufficient. To make you weep, to make you sick, to make you shudder. Cassie's blog is Freckles Cassie, CASSIE, FrecklesCassie.wordpress.com. Political teen tidbits. And Cassie is, of course, our political teen. She found another story arising out of the Don T. Hutto Family Detention Center. See, that's another one of those little phrases that really shouldn't be able to be said in the same breath with the United States of America. It is called the Don T. He's T. Don, not Don T. And Don Hutto was the father of the private prison movement, you know, where you get a contract from state or local, from government or federal government to run a prison, and then because you have shareholders, you maximize your profits by minimizing the decency of care that you afford to the people entrusted to you. Because even though they're prisoners, they're still people. They might not even be nice people, but they are still, by God, people. This is a story, Dateline Austin, Texas. From the Globe and Mail. Even if you try to look past the 8-meter-high chain link fence, oh God! Now we got to translate that to feet. Okay, it's a 25-foot-high fence. The 8-meter-high chain link fence, beyond the scores of uniformed guards patrolling the perimeter, and away from the cameras, metal detectors, and lasers, there isn't the slightest evidence of children inside the T. Don Hutto Family Detention Center. Why in the sweet name of God do we have anything called a family detention center? Why are we detaining families? Wait a minute. Could it be because that's the Orwellian newspeak in Bushmerica for the T. Don Hutto concentration camp? Because that's what it is. Inside the thick whitewashed walls of this former maximum security prison in the heart of Texas are about... Wait, America, did you know this? There are about 170 children. One of those children is a 9-year-old Canadian boy. A 9-year-old Canadian boy named Kevin. Kevin. His name's just Kevin.
He's 9 years old, and his first name may be Kevin, but by God, his last name is all wrong. Kevin and his mommy and daddy were flying from Guyana to Toronto. And somebody on the plane had a heart attack. The person died. And because of that, they made an unscheduled stop in Puerto Rico. And everyone was taken off the plane. And U.S. customs officials seized Kevin and his mommy and his daddy and put them in prison. For all intents and purposes, perhaps, forever. Forever. A 9-year-old boy whose future, for the foreseeable future, and the future that he cannot foresee, is prison. Remember, they were on their way to Canada. This is the letter Kevin wrote. Dear Mr. Prime Minister Haper, I don't like to stay in this jail. I'm only 9 years old. I want to go to my school in Canada. I'm sleeping beside the wall. Please, Mr. Prime Minister Haper, give visa for my family. This place is not good for me. I want to get out of the cell. Just please give visa for my family. My homeland is in Canada. My life is over there. I'm also sleeping beside washroom. Prime Minister Haper, please bring me and my family to Canada. Thank you so much. Is there a dry eye left in the listening audience? You see, Kevin is a Canadian citizen. His parents, however, are Majid and Masoma. That's their first names. And they are quite possibly the worst possible thing a human could be on the face of planet Earth in the year 2007. They are Iranians. You see, Kevin's parents came to Canada in the 1990s. And just as an aside, people have tried to get in and do an interview with Kevin and or his parents at the T. Don Hutto family concentration camp. Oh, see, he's calling them Nazis! Dadgummit, look at what a concentration camp was. We have to get over this notion that because it does it, that just because we don't put umlauts over anything doesn't mean it's not a concentration camp. It is a concentration of a population for a specific purpose. Just because there aren't any ovens yet, and just because there aren't any tanks of Zyklon B being carried in yet, doesn't make it any less a concentration camp. Kevin's parents left Iran. They fled Iran because, you know, Iran's not a place that a lot of people who, you know, want personal freedom are particularly crazy about being. You know, if you're a female and you don't want to walk around in a damn beekeeper suit all day,
you might want to bug out. And so they went to Canada in 1995, and they filed for political asylum. And among other things, Majid did things like, well, just odd jobs. Became a manager of an East Toronto pizza joint. And that paid the rent on a one-bedroom apartment in Toronto. 1997, Kevin was born. Kevin even started school in Canada. He attended elementary school up to third grade. But the Canadian government decided to deny their application for asylum. And all three, including Kevin, the Canadian citizen, in December 2005, were deported. And when they got back to Tehran, Majid was taken away from his family, and he was thrown into a prison cell, no questions asked. Gee, it sounds a little bit like the torture bill we've got in this country now, doesn't it? And he was beaten, and he was tortured. And they immediately did everything in their power to get out of Iran again. Can you imagine the pull of the agonizing, aching yearning for freedom that must beat inside that man and that woman and that child's heart? Because they went and they paid, they gathered up $40,000 and they paid a people smuggler. And the people smuggler came up with dummied up phony documents. Greek passports. And they traveled to Guyana, where they got on the plane for Toronto. And because of that freak set of circumstances, the woman dying a few seats back of them, they had to deplane in Puerto Rico, where they fell under the watchful gaze of the Bush administration, who told them politely but firmly, "Your papers are not in order. You will come with us." Life in the T. Don Hutto concentration camp is a little like this. You get up at 5:30 a.m., no matter who you are, mother, father, child. At 5:30 a.m., you go and you take a shower. Each meal, after the shower, they go to breakfast, they get 15 minutes to eat their meal. The rest of the day is a sort of seamless sameness that flows one into the next. Bedtime is 9:30 p.m., and laser-triggered alarms go off if anyone gets up. Our youngest is approximately Kevin's age, and because I have this gift or this curse for imagineering, I can imagine how she would respond in such a situation. Children are not meant to be imprisoned. Because, you see, if one of them broke for the fence, you know what would happen. 9-year-old, 12-year-old, 14-year-old, 40-year-old. If one of them broke for the fence, they'd be gunned down like animals. When they're guilty of nothing more than, what does Emma Lazarus's poem say? "Give us your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. They're guilty of nothing more than yearning to breathe free, and for that they are rotting in a hell hole called the T. Don Hutto Family Detention Center.
Somebody, for the love of God, strike up the band. Let's all sing God Bless America. Maybe after that we can sing the national anthem. But you see, I know how the other side responds to a story like that. They're lawbreakers! They broke the law! They were trying to enter the United States illegally! No, they weren't. They set foot on Puerto Rican soil entirely by accident. Kevin, meanwhile, has lost 6 pounds in the past 2 weeks because he hasn't been eating. All the food comes out of cans, beans, beef. Sometimes they give rice, but it's all garbage. And, of course, it has to be garbage at the T. Don Hutto Family Detention Center, because if they don't feed the inmates garbage, the stockholders will revolt. Because, after all, at the T. Don Hutto Family Detention Center in Texas, it's about the profits. It's about privatizing the system. Just like, bear in mind, the system was privatized at Walter Reed. And thousands of skilled service personnel left rather than be thrown on the tender mercies of a company that was run by a former Halliburton official. And the day comes, and the day goes, and the day comes, and the day goes, and Kevin, the Canadian citizen, locked up under the provisions of the torture bill that Jay Rockefeller and 12 other mugwump Democrats voted for, on and on, and Kevin sits in jail, convicted of nothing. Hey, Senator Jay. Hey, Senator Lieberman. You worry about terrorists? Guess what you're doing? You're manufacturing them. You, with your torture bill. Kevin wants to love his country in Canada. Kevin would like to have a good impression of the United States, but you and your T. Don Hutto Family Detention Center may very well make an extremist out of him. Make an extremist out of him like the friends and neighbors of a family day before yesterday in Afghanistan, where 9 civilians, including 4 children, between the ages of 6 months and maybe 10, were blown into thousands of molecular pieces when 2 one-ton bombs dropped by American aircraft blew away their mud hut. The day before that, 8 civilians were killed by U.S. Marines, who began spraying a busy street with gunfire out of frustration after an IED attack. Do let's sing God Bless America. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is the Horn. This is America's liberal voice. This may be the only voice that a child like Kevin has. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Of walking in your shoes. I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Do you believe the environment is issue number one? Does the idea of genetically modified food cause you to lose your appetite? Do you prefer green over greed? Do rising sea levels and vanishing polar ice cause you concern about our planet and what we are doing to it? Would you like news with attitude on the environment, organics, renewable sources of energy? Well, then join me, John Fox, for Foxed Up. Weekdays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. in the UK, and 9 a.m. here in Sydney, where conversation radio becomes conservation radio, and we turn it straight up to 11, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing as school.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves that he's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Misspoke. I will correct my mistakes whenever I know that I have made them. I said that the bombs dropped on the family in Afghanistan killed children between the ages of 6 and 10, and I was mistaken. I was wrong. the bombs that were dropped on the home of Ghulam Nabi were dropped on children between the ages of 6 months and 5 years. Ghulam Nabi told reporters yesterday how his parents, his sister, his nephew, and four of his siblings' children were killed in the airstrikes. The U.S. said it had carried out the bombings after militants fired a rocket at a NATO base in the province of Kapisa. Coalition forces observed two men with AK-47s assault rifles leaving the scene of the rocket attack and entering the compound, said Lieutenant Colonel David Assetta, a military spokesman. These men knowingly endangered civilians by retreating into a populated area while conducting attacks against coalition forces, so we bombed the living bejesus out of them. The compound was a little cluster of mud huts. You remember when Rummy said he wanted to... Was it Rummy? Yeah, it was Rummy. Said he wanted to attack Iraq because there weren't any good targets left in Afghanistan. Jesus, where is that man? You gotta wonder if Ghulam Nabi's house was a good target. Huh, Rummy? Was it? Was Ghulam Nabi's little six-month-old baby niece or nephew a good target, Rumsfeld, you monster, you killer, you... Oh, God! To the phones. Luke, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm sorry you don't ever get worked up on this show. You know how it is. I know you just kind of go along.
Yeah. Just cruising along, and then I remember that I wanted to make sure that I got this, and then I read it, and I'm all just all over
again. Well, let's see. Let's start off with a couple things. First of all, anybody that wants to watch at midnight, the first 15 minutes of Mr. Oberman's show was an interview with Mr. Wilson, Joe Wilson.
Yes.
And tonight I think Larry King's going to have him on, so I'd say we'll see Mr. Wilson for a few days.
Oh, God. Joe, can you tell me, did you know Anna Nicole Smith?
Oh, God, I tell you what. It's like I used to say, what was it? Military intelligence is an oxymoron. So is Larry King live.
Larry King waiting for embalming.
Like the Hall of Presidents, you know how it is. I think Larry's probably retired 10 years ago when they just left the robot there. But, let's get into this. I know we'll have some fun. I sent you the thing, you know, about I saw it over at Huffington Post where they were talking about, you know, here are the talking points you're going to hear the next couple of days. You know, she wasn't covert, and
yes,
it's all just, Fitzgerald's not vindictive. And like I say, I think it should be a drinking game. Every time we hear one of these, we take a shot. Of course, in about 10 minutes, we'll all be just totally soused, but what the heck?
Oh, loaded beyond all comprehension.
Maybe that's the best way to watch all this. I tell you what,
sometimes I think it is, Luke.
But let's see. Let's get into some other stuff. Oh, well, the one thing that on this is watch the words they use. Just remember, he's the fall guy, not a scapegoat. A fall guy was part of the plan. A scapegoat's the innocent person they blame. And like they said, no matter what we think of him, he did it. You know what I mean? It's not like we were going to let him off of it.
These jurors weren't stupid. They can see a patsy when a patsy's put in front of them.
But it's like say, let's see what the other thing I have. Something else. It's like say, well, now that it's over, I'm sure that they'll find some other reason they can't talk about it at the White House. Well, it's an ongoing investigation. They're like, well, it's over.
No. Dana Perino came out. They couldn't find Tony Snow. Dana Perino came out, and we had the audio a little bit earlier, Luke, and she said, well, you know, like, it turns out that we've just heard from, like, Mr. Libby's, like, you know, lawyer team thingy, you know, and, like, you know, it's real gnarly because, like, they say that they're going to ask for a new trial, so, like, the case is still going on, so, like, we won't be talking about it.
That's another case.
Kind of is, but not to them.
I know. All right. Well, one thing we're finding out that this is kind of covering up, but one thing we found out is now apparently part of this big chunk with Walter Reed is, can we all say the words privatization?
No,
this company IAPIT,
run by a former executive from Halliburton. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Three bags full.
It's like, isn't it amazing how the word privatization keeps cropping up every time there's a screw up in this country? FEMA. Well, we privatized a whole lot of that. Well, you know, it's amazing how the government could do such a shoddy job that you had to go to people who did a worse job.
Well, there's just some things in life that should not be driven by the profit motive and the stock market.
Agreed. I mean, there's some things I want the government to do. They're supposed to do it.
Right. You know, and, you know, maybe there's a few more things. He's a communist. You know, make the trains run on time. Make the planes run on time.
Can you imagine that when they privatize the FAA? Isn't that going to be fun thinking, we're flying, and they're talking to the cheapest person they could find to sit watching the radar screen?
Well, the same thing applies to the Transportation Safety Administration. This business with allowing the workers there, and you know, it absolutely causes paroxysms inside the White House and inside the minority, the Clavern or whatever they call it. The Republicans are just shocked at the idea that we would decide that we want to let transportation screeners that has the highest turnover of any federal job, that we want to let them unionize and have a decent life so that we could count on them to actually be the vital link they are and should be in keeping bad people off airplanes.
I tell you what, then we turn around and you see all this other thing. It's commission time again. Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Like, well, let's see now. Let's see that record George W. has, the stupid guy, excuse me, has with commission. Let's see. 9/11 commission? Nah, we don't need that. Want it all the way. Forget that.
Iraq study group?
No, just forget that. Throw that in the trash can.
No, we're going to do the exact opposite of whatever the Iraq study group says to do. Yeah, I know.
And it's like they're going to put a commission together. It's like we said the other day. Why? We know what the problem is. We saw it. There's already been an investigation. It was in the Post.
Not to them, though.
Well, I'm sure.
And again, you see, Luke, that's why I sort of, you know, thinking out loud as I'm prone to do on this program, that's why I wondered earlier if Harry Reid coming out and saying, don't you pardon Scooter Libby, George, don't do it. Tell us you're not going to pardon Scooter Libby. Because George will do exactly the opposite of whatever he's told not to do, especially if somebody he hates tells him not to.
Well, that's Reed's idea, I think. It's like, yeah, go ahead and pardon him. Boy, we'll run on this in 2008. I thought earlier this evening on one of the CNN shows, I was looking around, you know, seeing what they were talking about, and one of the things they ran was that thing during the 2000 election where George was talking about having a more ethical government. And I, that's a tape they should run every chance they get.
I was in front of the television sometime in January 2001 when they swore in the White House staff. And he delivered the semi-literate speech about how he expected people to not just live by the letter of the law, but by the spirit of the law as well, and be better than the law.
Oh, God. Only spirits George knows come out of a bottle. Oh, my God.
Oh, I remember looking at my dad and him looking at me with that what in the hell's going on here look that he had. and just say, did I hear that? I know my ears are old, but did I hear that? Yeah, Dad, you did.
It's like, turn down the light, son. When that flash of lightning comes in, it's going to be awful bright.
Well, he said, you know, there's not a person in that room that's not a criminal in waiting.
I was going to say, the last time somebody could have said the last time we had this all goes to the group together was when we had the last meeting from our prison days.
Yeah, the last time the parole board got together to consider the guys from cell block G.
let's see, what was the other one? Oh, last night I was watching flipping around channels, and they were watching the reporters on CNN, and they had their, as I call them, their crack political team.
Their crackhead political team.
Yeah. of Paula Zahn's last night, they had Crowley, King, and Roberts. And they were sitting there, and they started talking about the thing with Giuliani and his son. And if you notice in that, of course, they never cover the, they never hear, they report what the son said, but they make sure they carry the tape of Rudy speaking. But I've never seen the tape of his son speaking. But.
Well, you know that a couple of his other kids are definitely out for the campaign, right?
Oh.
Apparently, his children by his third wife?
No, second wife.
Second wife, that's one
of these is the son from the second wife.
Yeah, there's a daughter, and, you know, they're just not real happy about how Rudy handled the whole moving the new missus into Gracie Mansion and throwing the family out thing.
Well, they won't be out on the campaign trail.
Moving the
mistress in, not the missus. Remember, this is,
well,
like,
right.
this is still
yeah,
just
the mistress. The new mistress. My bad.
Remember, because he was still married to Donna. This is just after he told
the
public that, oh, by the way, Donna, we're getting divorced.
Yeah, see, I get my Republican family values terms mixed up, Luke.
I know, it's...
The new missus, the old mistress, the new mistress, you know,
well,
God knows trying to keep up with Newt Gingrich is just...
I know. Well, if I say, I do want somebody in the thing to ask, ask him, you know, said, are we going to have a first lady and a first mistress? Just for the idea, we just want to know. But, you know, but I was talking about the reporters. And they were sitting there going, well, we're going to get, you know, Rudy's going to get a pass on this. And I'm sitting there going, gee, shades of 2000. It's like, you know, isn't this how we got the stupid guy? It's like,
yeah, Rudy's going to get a pass on this because they're going to give it to him, Luke.
Huh?
Rudy's going to get the pass because they're going to give it to him.
Oh, that's what I mean. It's like, guys, you know, I wrote them a nice little email this afternoon to their show. And I just said, look, that's how we got the stupid guy in the White House now. Because you all forgot to go down to Texas and check out what they were handing you out at the campaign. They said, oh, we were in balance. Our budget was in balance. Of course, they were $10 billion out of balance. You know, we have No Child Left Behind. Yeah, we have a 40% dropout rate.
Yeah, that was back in the heady days of Rod Page's wild success in Houston.
My sister-in-law used to work in San Antonio as a substitute teacher, and she told me about this years ago. Said that right before they do the test, amazingly enough, a whole bunch of kids would either get thrown out or transferred. And amazingly enough, it was the kids who were making the D's and the F's. So when you only test the kids making A's, B's, and C's, it's amazing how good your numbers look.
I hate these people. I just despise them.
Well, here's the other thing. Have you seen this thing? Now, they're getting on Mrs. Clinton about her drawl, her southern drawl, and I'm sitting there going, Gina, let's see, she lived in Arkansas for 18 years. Now, Bob, you could probably could talk about this, you know, going from Alabama to West Virginia. You know, I'm sorry, but, you know, when I get around my family, some of my family comes in from California, and they don't have any much of a drawl until they're around us for about 30 minutes. About 30 minutes, their drawl's right back.
Oh, I walk out of a store down here and say, y'all come back now. Yeah, you take care now. And it's right back.
Mm-hmm. And they were just so ashamed, you know, just so surprised that she has a drawl. Of course, it's a fake drawl.
Oh no, I heard that life support system for a haircut say ask a caller the other day, and what did you think of Senator Clinton's phony accent?
You know what? The only thing I got to say is someday I want him to be somewhere within range of me where he's doing one of those things like outside the hospice. I'm taking every boombox I can find. I'm parking on the street, and I'm going to find every, and I'm going to go to the used record store, and I'm going to find every polka record I can find.
Well, I just can't wait till they finally catch Hannity with, in his Pastor Ted moment.
Oh, I'm still just amazed that they must hire people from the radio station to keep an eye on Rush while he's in country.
In country.
Well, like I say, you know what I mean? I'm still just waiting for somebody to ever explain to me why he needed that Viagra on that all-boys weekend.
Well, and why there were two gone.
Yeah, it's like I say, look, everybody, let's just say those words, Jeff Christie. Let's look into Jeff Christie's past, people. Somebody do that, just have some fun.
Oh, he did. In the Hill District. In Pittsburgh. No, it was up in Oakland. It was on the Pitt campus. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's what I mean. If somewhere those records exist, I don't care if they were expunged, somewhere there's a copy of them. It would be so much fun to get those to the smoking gun.
Oh, wouldn't though?
Well, I tell you what, bud, I'm going to let you get somebody else in. I see we've just got a few minutes left.
All right. Thanks, Luke.
You
take it easy now.
Cut.
Bye now. And yeah, we'll go to the. But just to flesh out something that Luke and I were talking about, this business with allowing the transportation screeners to actually have a union and decent wages and benefits, maybe a pension, maybe a retirement with some dignity, and maybe cut down on the revolving door that is the turnover rate at TSA. Jim Demented from South Carolina, just certifiably insane, makes Lindsey Graham look like a statesman. He was heard to complain that allowing TSA screeners to unionize would be a $17 million a year paycheck for the big unions. So, you know, when it comes to actually securing America, once again, you know, they don't care so much. It's all politics, every last bit of it. Let's go back to the phone. Sarge is with us. Hey, Sarge, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I was just looking at this story on the 12-year-old boy. Found it at WashingtonPost.com.
Yeah.
Dimitri Driver, he was in Prince George County, Maryland. Truth, the distraction there would have cost $80. The boy was in the hospital, I believe it said over 6 weeks, had two surgeries. The cost of what medical treatment he did get will be more than $250,000. The family had been cut off of Medicaid, and even if they had Medicaid, they would have had trouble because dentists are hard to find. Sometimes they say they have to travel as far as 3 hours to get to the closest dentist.
To get to a dentist who accepts Medicaid payments.
And the brother had 6 rotten teeth, and the mother was trying to get help for him. And, whew, there you go.
Now, see, the thing that I hate about these stories is I know how the right wing's going to spin them, Sarge. That it was a failure of parenting and not a failure of government or a failure of services.
Yeah. Well, and they won't go into it. But now, I'm sitting here right now. I've got an abscess, too. And I'm on Medicaid because the VA's so sorry I had to switch over to Medicaid. And the nearest dentist I can't find. I don't even know where the nearest one is to here. And then when I do find one, I've got to make an appointment, and it sets up to whatever time they got open for me. Then I have to contact Medicaid transportation, but the appointment has to be more than 3 days away because they want a 3-day notice to set you up into the system to take you to the appointment.
Right, and when you've got something like an abscess, you don't fool around.
Yeah, and that's not the way the game is played with the system today. And the more they mess with the system, the worse it gets. It's just, you know, it's just like playing Russian roulette. Can I get to the dentist before the abscess gets too bad? You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, and see, let's remember that Medicaid is in the shape it's in, Sarge, not because it's a bad program. Medicaid is in the shape that it is in because George Bush's buddies needed a tax cut in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Clinton left the White House with a massive surplus on hand that could have taken care of Social Security. It could have shored up Medicaid. It could have gone toward a responsible prescription drug program. But instead...
Look, Bob, here's something else. It's like my doctor that I go to. He takes Medicaid, but he actually thinks and told me that he is doing something for his country by accepting Medicaid patients.
No. Well, to a certain extent, he may be in this current in these current circumstances, Sarge, because they don't break even.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's sad. This is what
the right wingers have done, Sarge. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to get head up, and I'm not head up at you. But this is what the right wing has done. They are trying to kill these things, these valuable things, whether it's Medicaid or Medicare or Social Security or any of the things that provide for a little bit of dignity for all Americans. They're trying to kill them. They can't kill them outright. They know that. But what they're trying to do is make them so unpalatable, so difficult to obtain, that it will sort of be crushed or implode of its own weight.
Well, look.
And then they will declare that it's another government program failed. It's just like FEMA.
Yeah. Well, look at Mississippi Coast. These doctors down there are saying we're not going to accept any new Medicaid patients. But there's so much that's needed, and so there are these free clinics set up, but they're trying to close those down. The doctors are, because they're scared of the competition. Well, you know, they wouldn't have to be scared of the competition if they have a better system to work with. But the insurance companies are so determined on what they will let the doctors do and what they won't let them do. Then you got the HMOs and all that who are saying, well, now, look, doctor, you don't know. This person doesn't need that medicine. Get them out of here. You know, we aren't going to pay for that. And it's just, you know, it's one roadblock after the other. And then they wonder why people, do the things they do.
And Sarge, sometimes it seems like this show is just too doggone short, but we got to roll.
Okay, man. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Sarge. And that's what I mean. We get caught up in the stories of the day, and there's stuff that just slides by that means something. It means something individually, but it, by God, means something nationally, too. Because, what, 300 million people in this country? Remember his name, okay? Remember his name like I remember the name of Sun Hudson, the little boy that was pulled off life support and killed under a law that George Bush authored when he was the governor of Texas. Remember the name of Diamante Driver, 12 years old, because he's the one that came to the attention of the media. It happens again and again and again. It is statistically impossible that this is the only time that it's happened. It is happening all over America, and it is happening by virtue of the votes of people who said they were voting a moral line by voting for the Republicans. God, remember that. If you're a praying person, pray for little Kevin and his family. If you're not a praying person, do something. Tell your congressman. Tell your congressman that it's unacceptable that one of your fellow Americans, 12 years old, Diamante Driver, died from a toothache. There I go, giving marching orders. I'm sorry. Listen, thanks, everybody. I hope you know how much I appreciate your time. The show tonight was produced by my lovely, darling, talented wife, Agnes, back in West Virginia. Engineered by John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org makes all the streams go. He makes the podcasts happen. He makes the archives happen. He's having a fundraiser. Do the right thing, if the horn means anything to you at all. Many thanks to the folks at iTunes for listing the horn there. And many thanks also to our buddies Clyde and Wally and Dookie at WD40.com. They've got a streamer up there as well. You can listen at WD40.com. Thanks, of course, are also due to our IT professional, Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida. They're due to our wonderful moderators in the chat room. They're due to our news ninjas, Susan and Gene. Gene, for heaven's sakes, get to feeling better, please, soon. We sure hope you do. And thanks are also due to the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters, who get up every day and go and build the American dream. And by building the American dream and supporting this network, they're saving the American dream. And always, 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 RMR. There's a lot of bad blood underneath the veneer.
listening to the Venture 3 Radio Network.
Internet Archive authenticates 9/11 BBC video. It is just not Walter Reed. Soldiers share troubling stories of military health care across the United States. Voter turnout among the young still lags. Why? Edwards Camp capitalizes on Ann Coulter slur. Al-Qaeda targets Prince Harry. China to increase military spending. Gallup poll asks, is Al Gore boom for president just hype? Edwards sends video to 70,000 Iowa homes. Earth's crust is missing in mid-Atlantic. Greenhouse effect is a myth, says scientists. Kremlin critic shot in front of his Maryland home. Giuliani up 25 points over McCain, a new poll shows. Iran nears industrial and fuel production. Scientists unite to push Bush on climate. Study sees harmful hunt for extra oil. Judge restricts New York police surveillance. Year of the pig signals conflicts before New World Order, says soothsayers. The happiest man in the world? Well, you can learn how he does it, says academic-turned-Buddhist monk. And finally, and the sports fans who drink the most wine are? New figures are released. These are the issues ahead on the Jeff Allen Wolf Show, starting now.